you seen this thing in iOS 14.5 where Facebook is going to go out of business if you don't give them app tracking transparency permission? And Instagram. Like, the Facebook one's like, whatever. But Instagram had the exact same dialogue.
It's from the same company.
Yeah. For me, I saw it on the iOS 14.6 beta. And I guess it's just programmed to know whatever version of iOS you're on. Because the first time I saw like screenshots from someone else, it was iOS 14.5, which is when this stuff starts. But then I was on the beta and it already knew the iOS version. So it probably just checks for what your version number is. And then, you know, that way it'll be like, iOS 18, turn on app tracking, you're going to go out of business. Like,
and what's the phrase? It's like, help keep Instagram free of charge.
Yeah. Man, yeah. I kind of want to do app tracking for like every app except for Facebook and Instagram, just out of principle.
But in a third party app, if you allow tracking, then if they integrate the Facebook SDK, then you're saying allow to let the Facebook SDK get your data that way. If you think about it,
yeah, that's true. That's true. There's no good way out of this.
No, you have to say no to all, I guess.
Do you think you get better battery life without app tracking?
I mean, technically, there's probably slightly fewer less networking calls going on because there's less data to actually shuttle out your system. But
it's like one less process,
One less. Across all of your apps, you're probably saving like 0.01% like network traffic.
You could just not have the Facebook app and save, I don't know, 50% or something.
Like, it's always like a weird illuminating thing. If you plug in your phone to a Mac and you go on the console app, you can make it just like show the logs that are coming out the phone, and your phone's just sitting there doing nothing at all, right? It's just on the home screen, literally dormant. Yeah. But the phone is generating hundreds of log messages every single second. Like, you can't keep up with the history. It's just constant. Yeah. There's constant. The phone's just logging like everything, like the current cell service, the current battery life, the current display conditions. Like, so many things when you think the phone's just sitting there doing nothing, and then you look in like the console, and the messages are just endless, and they generate. It must be like 1,000 every 10 seconds. It's just insane the amount of just random junk that's coming out of the thing. Because you think of these things as like inert devices, unless you're using them, but obviously they're really complicated subsystems that are constantly doing all sorts of things.
Yeah, even just waiting for you to be communicated is a whole thing. That would be cool to see for the Apple Watch. Like, what is the Apple Watch doing on your wrist? Is it just sits there?
It's loading the always on Ultima.
That's true. So we did get a software update this week, iOS 14.5.1, not a beta, but an actual, software release for the public. And, kind of the one big feature in it is that it does what iOS 14.5 didn't do in 5 months of testing, which is, try to turn on the app tracking transparency feature for everyone, because for some reason it was grayed out for a lot of users in the actual 14.5 release.
Kind of.
Okay.
It fixes a different issue related to app tracking transparency.
Where the grayed out
would not be where you wouldn't be. There was a different issue where even if the switch was toggled on, you wouldn't see the prompts. So, like, if you were in an app that was actually trying to show you the app tracking transparency prompt, it wouldn't show up. So that's what that 14.5.1 fix is.
Okay.
The grayed out situation persists. So that still happens. If you Apple says that the toggle should be grayed out if you're like under the age of 13, if you're in certain countries, if your Apple ID is less than 3 days old, if your device is managed by an enterprise MDM. System, right? Because they've turned it off. But there's still plenty of people out there who can't get the choice to turn it on or off. It's just permanently grayed out for them. And 14.5.1 does not actually fix that issue. People thought that's when you read the release notes, it sounds like fix for the app tracking transparency thing. So everyone's like, oh, the gray toggle fix. But no, it's not. It's not actually related to that.
How old were you when your Apple ID was only 3 days old?
I mean, poof. I was definitely
a teenager.
I mean, I know you're joking, but I guess my Apple ID was when I got my iMac. So that must have been 2010. So that was, I don't know, it must have been like 12.
Right, exactly. Because when I hear that 30-year-old Apple ID, it just, man, it sounds like a long time ago.
When I have a kid, I'll make the Apple ID the day they're born. That way they won't have any of these problems.
My kids have Apple IDs because all the good email addresses are going away. Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, by the time I've the iCloud and Apple, the iCloud emails, you have no chance ever of getting any ID anymore that's like, no, I've got 14,000 numbers written on the end of it. Like,
yeah. It's just impossible. I mean, I still had to use a dot, but it's like first last name. I think it's first dot last name.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Have I told you this before? I used to have Benjamin dot Mayo at iCloud.com, I think. And then
what happened to
I lost the account when I was, because I did set this up when I was like 11, when iCloud first came out, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got like the, I didn't have a, my parents had an iOS device at that time. So I set up the iCloud account with my name because I wanted my name. And then we lost the account. So my actual iCloud emails, I got some stupid number appended on the end of it because I stole my own name and I can't remember what account it was.
It's a cell phone.
But I just use my Gmail email for my Apple ID.
Oh, okay. I used to have zhall at apple.com when I worked at the Apple store. That was a good one.
See, that's a good name.
Yeah, it is a good name. I used to have to do zacharyhall@me.com. I never had one in time for, or never had an Apple ID that was an Apple email domain, back when .mac was available. But I did get zacharyhall@me.com and At first I did zachhall@me.com, just Z-A-C, you know, simple, @me.com. And then that was part of a Mobile Me free trial. And I didn't actually pay for Mobile Me because I think I was, I don't know, like 20 or something. And so that took up the domain. And so whenever iCloud was like, now it's free, you can make an @me.com or iCloud.com eventually account for free. Then I couldn't do Zach Hall because I was taken for my free trial. But it, like, I did Zachary Hall, which is longer. I didn't really love it. And it's only because, I think it's only because my name is spelled E-R-Y and that's less common. So that's why it was available. But, eventually they freed up all of the Apple IDs that were at like non-paid status where they were reserved for customers but you didn't pay your account and they got freed up. And I was like, oh, cool. So then I got Zach Hall @me.com back again. But of course, Apple IDs, you can't like merge them. And because it's two different Apple accounts, I still have to have like a Gmail for my Apple ID for the store. Yeah. Love that. Great.
Apple ID management. How fun. Even in 2021. It's, it's the system they made for the iTunes store in 2001 and they've never changed it.
Yeah. So that's iOS 14.5, 0.1. And it's also kind of funny to think about how this was going to be an iOS 14.0 feature, you know, and it ended up being in 0.5 and it's still being kind of tinkered around with, prepared.
Yeah, and everyone's still mad about it.
That's true.
I mean, like the Facebook situation, well, they're slowly rolling that alert out to their whole user base. They're doing it over like the course of like a month or something. But I mean, realistically, you don't, like, you can say no to that and have no fear that Facebook continue to be free. Like, they're not going to start charging iOS customers to use Facebook, right? Like,
we should definitely mention that, yeah.
there are arguments about why it's like more, you know, it's more nuanced than just say no, right? Sure, but like the idea that Facebook's going to suddenly start charging you to use Facebook if you don't allow the if they get enough people saying not to allow tracking transparency is ridiculous. Like,
yeah, I mean,
they would never be
is,
the company they are if they were a paid service.
Yeah, the thing to me is there's just no user incentive, you know, aside from maybe having better ads, they, you know, but it's not much of an incentive to
yeah, and Apple specifically says in the review guidelines, you're not allowed to provide incentives for saying yes, you're not allowed to do, I think the help Facebook, you know, make money situation is about like as close to toeing the line as the review guidelines currently say, because they're not like the guidelines say the apps aren't allowed to encourage you to say yes or no. You're not even allowed to have a pre-flight dialogue, the Facebook pop-up that you get, it just says continue, right? It doesn't say like not now or come back later. Like all of those options, they're not allowed to offer. They literally only allowed to give you like an informational screen, and then the next screen must ask for the prompt if they're going to show the prompt. Because what happens with like push notifications permission is like a lot of the time nowadays, apps will show their own permissions dialogue, which says, we want to ask you for push notifications. Do you want to do that? And so if you press close, it never shows you the system prompt, because the system prompt, the app only gets one chance to show it. So they want to show their prompt first, so that if you say no right now, they at least have an opportunity to show the system prompt at a later time. But Apple's like specifically outlawed that now. So like app tracking transparency pop-ups, you can't pre-flight them with your own dialogue to check that you're going to say yes or no first. Like, you just have to show the prompt and that's it. So all these companies are basically just stuck in the mud, and they're not allowed to offer incentives for saying yes or anything. So there really is, as a customer, pretty much no reason to say yes. Like, you might as well just say no and just get, you know, untargeted advertising, essentially.
Right. And I do sympathize with the app developers who want you to opt into this, because it's the way it's always been, and then they're going to lose a certain level of information. But in that, the way that it's presented from Apple's side, it's, you know, allow or do not track me, basically. It's so aggressive the way it's stated, but it's also just the way it is. Like, it isn't like Apple's lying about what happens. You know, it's just let people decide, and if you let them decide, there's just no incentive to opt in. So
yeah, and we'll see in, you know, 3 months, 6 months time whether ad rates were actually affected or not. Like, people like to worry about it, but a lot of the time, if you still want to address the iOS ad market, right, like, the advertisers are still going to have to compete for those same slots, and that's going to keep the price at roughly around where it was, if you see what I mean. Like, it's not like the inventory is getting bigger or smaller. It's just staying the same. It's just they're going to get slightly less visibility. So the pricing ad rates will fluctuate. But at the end of the day, I'm skeptical that there's actually going to be like revenue loss in most cases.
Yeah. I mean, the best way to advertise these days anyway is on our podcast.
For sure.
It's for sure.
For sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are sponsored this week by ExpressVPN. Do you browse in incognito mode? Do you try and stay private? Well, incognito mode won't help you. It doesn't change what the browser sees. Online trackers can still track you, whether you're using incognito mode or not. Your online activity is still tracked, and data brokers then buy and sell that data. To make yourself as invisible as possible when browsing online, you need ExpressVPN. Online trackers use a variety of data points and signals to identify you and differentiate you from other people in order to perform aggregation. One of these key data points is your IP address. The IP address scan can be used to uniquely identify you and your location. But with ExpressVPN, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server, and that means your IP address is masked. Every time you turn ExpressVPN on, you're getting a random IP address that is shared amongst other ExpressVPN customers. It makes it much more difficult for an advertiser to identify you and harvest your data. And it couldn't be simpler to use ExpressVPN. You just download the app, you press one button, and boom, the VPN is active. You can use ExpressVPN across all of your devices, laptop, phone, even your smart TV. One button, and boom, you are protected. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN on the market. Visit expressvpn.com/happyhour. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour to get 3 extra months for free. One more time, go right now to expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more and sign up with 3 extra months for free.
Nice. That was really targeted advertising, and we didn't even track anyone. That's cool. All right, let's talk about Apple Music and these rumors of a high fidelity upgrade. You know, the one thing that Apple Music doesn't have that everyone else is offering or will offer soon. So this all begins with Hits Daily Double. Mayo, tell me about Hits Daily Double and this rumor.
Yeah, so they're a website that covers like the music industry, so we don't really have much coverage of them on 9to5 Mac. Mac Rumors had a funny thing where they said the last time they covered Hits Daily Double was back in 2001, where they had a leak on the original iPod before it came out. So that's quite crazy history. But in terms of the current rumor, Hits Daily Double say that in the coming weeks, Apple is expected to announce a high fidelity audio streaming tier that will be the same $9.99 per user price point, i.e., they're not going to charge extra. What happens with like Spotify or Tidal or, you know, these other companies that offer stream music with a hi-fi option, they generally charge $5 more, you know, $10 more for the service. According to Hits Daily Double, the premium tier will be the same price. So I guess that means there is no premium tier. It's just baked in, right? and Hitsley Double say that the announcement's expected to coincide with the launch of the third gen AirPods. They're the ones that look like the AirPods Pro, but they don't have the tips on them, right? And this coincides with code findings that we saw in the first beta of iOS 14.6, where it references Dolby Audio support in the music app. So there is some synergy there with the code findings and also this seemingly music industry reputable reporter talking about the addition of hi-fi music in Apple Music. There's also been some murmurs that artists are already being asked to upload their tracks in this Dolby Audio format to obviously get ready for this to be like an official thing. The fact that they say they're not going to charge any more for it is a bit, I mean, it doesn't sound like Apple. Apple loves to extract money wherever they can. But I think what it probably means is like, it's just going to be a nice little added extra onto the Apple Music plan. And maybe it's focused more around spatial audio and taking advantage of that rather than like branding Apple Music Hi-Fi, which is what some of these other services have done. Like personally for me, I don't really find that lossless music sounds better, partly because that's I don't often use higher quality audio equipment, right? Like, and most people in the world, what they're listening to, they're listening through earbuds or AirPods or something where an uncompressed version of the audio track is any discernible difference in quality is going to be lost by the thing you're outputting it through, right? So there is questionable value to, you know, a hi-fi lossless service in the first place. What I think this probably means, if you decipher it a bit more, especially because they're supposed not going to charge extra, it'll be like, here's some tracks in our catalog, not all of them, not even, you know, 10 million, but like some new albums going forward, we're going to offer you mixes in a Dolby Audio format, which is basically like surround sound, so you can use them with your AirPods and do like a 3D soundstage spatial audio type situation with them. Mm-hmm. So it's like an added little bonus for Apple Music subscribers to get more out of their AirPods, kind of like how they added Time to Walk to Apple Fitness Plus. It's not enough to like justify it being its own thing. It's just like a little extra bonus you can roll in to make people that wear AirPods, and especially the newer AirPods that support spatial audio, have a better experience.
Yeah, something I was thinking about is the way that spatial audio as we know it works now, the way that you kind of show it off is with video, with movies and TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there is the spatial audio demo when you're in like the AirPods Max and AirPods Pro settings. I think you can discover it there, and that's probably just audio. And so then you can hear like an audio optimized version of spatial audio. But for me, it's, what's the perspective of you versus the phone or iPad? And then it uses that in mind to create relative to where you're listening to or listening from. So it's like if you have your phone in your left hand all the way away from you, then it's going to sound really like everything's coming from the left of you and less in the right channel, much more in the left channel. I've listened to like music and had spatial audio on and accidentally play music videos in like a deluxe album, for example. And all of a sudden it sounds really bad because the phone's in my pocket and it's doing spatial audio based on my head being up here and my phone being down there. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, front and center. And, you know, when you're watching a movie or TV show. So I'm really interested in what spatial audio that doesn't have to factor in where is the screen for the video component, and it's just, you know, like stereo plus, because it's still a stereo system with you know left and right channels. But I'm curious how they do this with audio with that, and now I'm eager to go and try out the sample and the settings for AirPods Max and Pro. But that's something that I'm really curious about. And I think we also know that even AirPods Max don't support lossless, right? It's a certain format that isn't supported. And so even Apple's $550 headphones don't support what you would, I guess, use like Tidal for.
At least with the current firmware.
Sure.
So like maybe there could be software updated, but we don't know that.
Yeah. And I'm not an audiophile at all, But I do know the difference in AirPods Pro and AirPods Max by sound, and it's just how much how muffled it sounds. Like AirPods Pro sound great, but when I'm really into music and I just want to hear all of it, like make it as immersive as possible, like I'm you know there in person, then I definitely don't get that from AirPods Pro, and I definitely recognize that clarity with AirPods Max. And so and that's just using different headphones, but without a different tier of audio. So, and you can't just do a tier that's targeted for, I don't know, the couple of hundred people who have AirPods Max. You want it to be beneficial to all the people using your popular headphones, you know, AirPods and AirPods Pro. So this sounds more compelling than if it was just a higher tier to match the other streaming services, because that's what's been awkward is that everyone has or is bringing a high fidelity tier to their subscription streaming service, except for Apple. And so on that account, it is awkward that Apple hasn't done it yet. But in practicality, it's like, who's going to benefit or care? Certainly not the majority. But if they can do this where they've got special mixed versions, I mean, that's kind of a cool feature. You can say on Apple Music, it's going to sound different than it will on any of those other services.
Yeah, like it's unmistakable. If you pay lossless audio, you have to be quite, you know, tuned in to notice a difference compared to decent high bitrate compressed audio, which is what Apple Music uses. Whereas a spatial audio environment is a completely different experience. Like you're going to notice it, and spatial audio is a cool thing. So it's almost like the difference between like the HomePod Mini and the big HomePod, where the whole idea was, well, people didn't buy the big HomePod because they don't care about that extra quality and sound, right?
Sure.
But spatial audio, you can, maybe it's a gimmick and it's fun rather than being like, you know, an essential addition to the music listening experience. But there's no way a person won't notice it, right? Like it's very clear that, oh, you're getting this different experience where the sound does feel like it's coming from different angles around you. And you're right when you said like the whole thing where the current spatial audio follows your device and where it is in your hand. They would have to change it for music because obviously your phone's in your pocket. So maybe they like simulate it so the focal point is always in the center between your head, if you see what I mean. And then they can just build out the sound around you. And that's what they're trying to simulate rather than trying to simulate it emanating from the iPad in your hand, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's a theory. So you know how Apple works a lot with Billie Eilish?
Mm-hmm.
She has a new album coming out on July 30th. That'd be a good album to, you know, Apple could market as being spatial audio on Apple Music. And like the iPod, she turns 20 this year, this winter. So,
I mean, that would be, if they can get like the new Billie Eilish album.
Yeah.
With a special features. I mean, that is a pretty big draw. Like streaming services have an issue where they're all pretty homogenous. They all offer the same library, right? And a couple of years back, there was a bit of a fight over doing exclusives, and there were some albums that came out only on one service or another, or they were like timed exclusives, and then the labels had a fit over it, and so everyone backed down, and now everything just comes out simultaneously. But something like a spatial audio experience seems like something that Apple could get the labels to sign on to, because it's not like the entire song isn't available elsewhere. It's just like a slightly different mix or a slightly different version of it.
Yeah, and you could remaster for spatial audio any existing music. It would just be the effort of doing it, you know. It wouldn't have to re-record everything. You just mix it in a different way. Yeah.
And even if other streaming services did offer it eventually, like there's such a good pairing between Apple Music and AirPods, right? They can just make it work perfectly with the spatial audio algorithms. Even if down the road other services catch on and they start offering, you know, 3D sound or whatever they want to call it, you're never going to quite get the same experience as just doing it natively with Apple's algorithms with Apple's service.
Yep. And we do think that the AirPods third generation will have spatial audio, even if they don't have noise cancellation and transparency, right?
So for it's not like, because that's a software feature, we don't know for sure, right? You can't look at the hardware and tell, but that is the rumor that it will support spatial audio, but not noise cancellation.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, because, and I mean, if it hits 80 dB, it's saying they're going to come out alongside the third-gen AirPods. It's the whole rumor's kind of undermined if the third-gen AirPods don't support spatial audio.
Yeah. Yeah, and it isn't just hits 80 dB with their reporting. It's also the aforementioned iOS 14.6 beta, right?
Yeah. Correct. And those references got taken out of beta 2, which is normally a good sign that they weren't meant to be available yet, if you see what I mean, i.e. Apple's working on it.
What is it? What is new in iOS 14.6 besides what's been taken out?
Nothing. Nothing? Oh, device support. It supports the iPad Pro and stuff, like the new iPad Pro.
Okay, well then that means it's going to be out when the iPad Pro comes out, which is May 21st.
Oh, wait, that's a good... Actually, maybe I'm... I'd have to double check that, actually, because...
Okay. What do we know?
That was what it was for, but you're like, maybe if it's coming out, maybe it's not coming out. I don't know. Okay, I don't know. But in terms of new features, I'm pretty sure there's nothing so far that we've actually found like notable.
Cool. Great. I'm running it. Yeah.
I mean, I'm running it as well, and I can't think of anything that's different.
Yeah. All right. And then talk about Deezer, because Deezer did a thing with the HomePod today that fits into all of this, and you've got impressions, I think, right?
Yeah, so Deezer added native support for the HomePod. This is the API that was introduced at iOS 14.3 in the fall. It launched with support from Pandora. Apple, when they announced the HomePod Mini, said that it would include services like Pandora and Amazon Music. So far, it's May, and Amazon Music doesn't actually support the HomePod API, so I'm not quite sure what happened there. But Deezer today announced support for it, and that includes their Deezer Hi-Fi tier. And they say that using the API natively on the HomePod, it can stream lossless audio in FLAC format. So if you're on the lower Deezer plans, you get MP3. And then if you're on the Hi-Fi tier, you get lossless audio streamed and played directly through the HomePod. You don't need to use AirPlay or anything. It just runs directly on device. You can use Siri voice commands to control it. And all that works fine. But I will say I personally cannot tell a meaningful difference between the lossless version. I was just going back and forth playing the same songs, a couple of songs on Deezer, Hi-Fi, and on Apple Music through the HomePod speakers, the big HomePod speakers. I did them in a stereo pair. It sounds identical. Like, maybe that if you're more tuned into audio quality than me, you could tell something apart, but I played the same songs like back to back three or four times, and I couldn't pick one from the other.
Okay.
So I don't know what that says about lossless audio.
It's lost on you, I guess. Okay, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about Ming-Chi Kuo and the iPad Mini. This is really a bummer of a story if you're hoping for the iPad Mini revolution to start again, because not only is the iPad Mini going to look old when it comes out, it's also not coming anytime soon. I mean, I think the first one is what bums me out the most, because if you know, I don't care when it launches, if it's going to be redesigned, but the fact that it won't be redesigned is like, well, then I don't care. And then I guess if you are in the market for an updated iPad Mini, then the timing, if you don't care about the design, then the timing is the new part of the story, huh?
Right. Like it's a bummer that it's not coming anytime soon, i.e. it's not coming until like the fall, the end of the year, which is what Quo reported. But our belief is that the iPad Mini update is going to get a bigger screen, but it's going to be like the... Do you remember when they changed the 329 iPad from 9.7 inches to 10.2? Like, the screen got bigger, but they didn't change the bezel design. It still had a home button. Like, they basically just made the screen bigger, right?
And it fit in the smart keyboard folio, right? That was the
10.5-inch. Yeah, the 10.5-inch iPad, because they gave it a bigger screen, but the bezel size didn't really change. And it certainly wasn't a dramatic change like what they did with the iPad Air to make it like the iPad Pro design, right? And so currently that's what we expect from the next iPad Mini. So it'll get a bigger screen, but it's still going to look old, which is unfortunate. And it's going to look even older in 7 months' time when it actually ships in the fall, because, you know, by then the iPad Air is going to be around for a while. It might even get the processor update. The iPad Pro is going to, you know, been around for 4 years at that point. Like, especially if they keep the iPad Mini at the premium price of $399, it feels pretty rough if they're going to still have like the big bezel, forehead, chin, Touch ID button situation. Like, I'd like it to be more like the iPad Air, where they put the Touch ID in the side button and they slim the bezels down. But so far, it's almost like they treat the 329 iPad and the iPad Pro, and the iPad Mini as like, we're not going to update the iPad Mini's design until the 329 iPad can, right? Like, and that's that, then the 329 iPad still gets away with it for at least another year, I'd say, just because it's the cheap one, right? And so they've got still a little bit more leeway before that one starts to look truly old. Mm-hmm. But the Mini is like the more premium product. And so unless they bring the pricing down to make it line up, it's just going to be an even more outdated product when it does ship at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that kind of sucks.
Maybe they should just stop calling things Mini, like the iPhone 12 Mini. You know, we only expect it to last one more year. The iPad Mini has, I mean, it was only ever great for like one generation, maybe two generations when it got Retina finally. But since then, it's always been, I mean, there was a point where like the iPad Mini was felt like the futuristic device because of the bezel situation. You know, the iPad 1, 2, 3, 4 had these giant bezels, and the iPad Mini was the first to do this thing where they're at least thin on the sides, and even though they have a forehead and chin. And it was all like, oh no, we're going to accidentally touch stuff because the bezels are too thin. And that was a long time ago. I mean, that was like 2012, I'd say. So yeah. it's too bad. Cause I think that, you know, the size differences, especially if you have like a big iPad, then having a very small iPad, it becomes like a different device. And also it is just, it is awkward that even though it's spec'd higher in terms of what I guess storage
that
the
is
iPad
it, yeah.
Mini costs more than the iPad. That's $329. You know, the $70 difference there is odd. I mean, if you're gonna have the iPad Mini and you're not gonna, you know, push it forward with technology, then have that be the even cheaper iPad. You know, sub $329. If that's how you're going to treat the iPad Mini. I mean, at the time it was like competing against. It was kind of Apple's answer to the Kindle Fire and competing tablets like that were all going smaller. But that obviously has come and gone. I mean, those things exist, but they're not competitive with like the same market as iPad. I don't think. So it's just kind of left around to be awkward, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. Like an iPad Mini with super thin bezels would look really cool. So everybody wants it to happen. It's just doesn't seem like it's going to be this year. Look, it's been a stressful time. Life is hard normally, but the pandemic certainly hasn't helped matters. Do you feel strained or just not as happy as that you do normally? Sometimes you just want someone to talk to who is trained about mental health and lifestyle. BetterHelp is quite literally here to help, and it lets you do all of that from the comfort of your own home. BetterHelp assesses your needs to match you with a licensed professional therapist tailored to helping your personal well-being. Simply connect in a safe and crucially, private online environment. After signing up, you can start communicating to a therapist in under 24 hours. This is not run-of-the-mill self-help. This is professional counseling experience. You can access counselors specialized in all sorts of areas like stress management, anger relief, relationships, depression, helping you get to sleep, and so much more. You can start a conversation with your therapist at your convenience. Just send a message at any time. The therapist responds in a timely basis, and you can schedule weekly video chats or phone calls if you want to as well. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid options are available. And of course, everything that you talk about is 100% private and confidential. Start living a happier life today. As a listener to this show, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/MacHappyHour. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/MacHappyHour, MacHappyHour. Thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring the show.
All right, Mio. So we just finished the Apple event. Let's talk about what we ordered from the Apple event.
Have you messed it up again?
I went on a shopping spree in a good way. Okay. So I mentioned last week, like I'm just kind of tamping it down ideally. And this always happens. So, you know, just don't even be surprised.
This is rote for this show. You say you're not going to buy anything and then you buy everything.
I've been told that I should wait a year and a half or so to try to buy a house because the market is really competitive right now. Okay. And I've also come to the conclusion that when I sit out on Apple products, there's less work for me to do in regard to those products. And that professionally, what I do, all that I do is this. I don't do anything on the side, or, you know, this isn't a side gig. So, it's easier to have things to you know, riff off those products and write stories than it is to not have them and just, you know, hope that there's other stuff to talk about. So, I think originally I told you that I wouldn't order AirTags, but I would buy them if they were local. And right. I kept watching Best Buy, and they kept saying 3 days out, 2 days out, 1 day out, and then the number would go back up. And our colleague Chance suggested checking Target, and I did, and they had accessories but not AirTags. But then Walmart, of all places, local, had 1-packs and 4-packs, and so what I ordered was a 4-pack, because of course, and then an accessory, like the little white loop thing for it to go in. And, mm-hmm. and then I'd also, separately gotten the Saddle Brown leather keychain loop. And I'm going to write about this for Friday. So when this episode comes out, cause I've got some thoughts on those things, but, they mistakenly didn't give me the single air tag on its own. They gave, or they didn't give me the single loop on its own, the white loop. They gave me a single air tag, and they're both $29. So I was like, okay, that's fine. And I ended up giving that one to a friend to just say, hey, do you want an air tag? And he's like, oh yes, definitely. And you know, it's kind of cool setting them up and everything. But, I got 4 for myself. I've had fun with the accessories, and, you know, I have thoughts. I'll put those into that story. We can talk about some things here, but, I think what I can say about it is that, you know, obviously you hope you never need these things. And that's one thing. And if you never need them, then who even cares about them? And there's not a lot of excitement there. But I'm someone who can have like an emotional reaction to cool toys and that kind of thing. And what I've found satisfying is not just putting it out of sight somewhere and then hoping I never have to think about it again, but thinking about things that I value and that are personal, and that if I lost them, it would really be a setback in a way that I wouldn't like. And so, my strategy has been putting them on the things that I'm proudest of, not the things that I'm going to lose. And it happens to be, you know, keys, of course, because, you know, if that's the obvious thing, but then what do you do with the other ones? I've done the backpack thing, of course, too. And I was fine with just having it in the pocket of the backpack without having it displayed. But once I got into the accessories, I'm like, okay, this is kind of neat to also have on display. And then the other thing is I've put one in my car, and it's just kind of neat to have like Find My for your car. You know, where did I park in this giant parking lot or something, you know, that kind of thing. And then the other thing is I put one on my motorcycle, which is something I thought I might do, and I did, and I like it. So, you know, you get the label on and put the little emoji on the tags in the Find My app. You know, you can pick any emoji that way, and I'm happy with that so far. So far, so good.
Yeah, I only bought one, as I stick to what I tell the podcast I'm buying.
Uh-huh. So yeah.
I have the one AirTag that I've put on my keys. I have the Belkin secure holder thing. Because rather than spending exorbitant amounts of money on the Apple accessories, I spent an exorbitant amount of money on the Belkin accessory, which is quite literally 2 pieces of plastic, although it's slightly less exorbitant in absolute value because it's £12 rather than like £25.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's still overpriced for what it is because it's literally 2 pieces of plastic that snap together to give you a key ring loop, right? Mm-hmm. But I think it's fine. Like, it does, it gets the job done. One of the things I didn't like about a lot of the Apple accessories, they're just quite like big. And for my keys, I just wanted something as small as possible. And out of the official selection, the Belkin ones, the closest you can get. I mean, now you can go on Amazon. There's like 20,000 different options of £5 keychain things you can buy. So maybe if I was buying another AirTag for, you know, a situation, I'd probably buy something off there instead. But like, for a piece of plastic, it's a nice piece of plastic, all right? You just like snap the thing together, it goes in your keys. And like you, again, I enjoy playing about with it when I first got it. It was fun to like do the thing where you do hide and seek around the house, and you go and track it down, and it's like, oh, that was cool. And I went out for a bit and went for a round and was just seeing whether the Fireman network would be responsive and how quickly does it update, that kind of thing. And like, for $29, the AirTag is a pretty great product. Like, it's backed up by the billion iPhones in the planet, so the penetration of the Fireman network is really dense. Like, if you lose something in a park, it's only going to take a minute or two for someone to be in the vicinity enough to let the AirTag report its location back to the server, right? Mm-hmm. And you get the nice integration to the Find My app, and it's directly price comparable with Tile and Samsung and Samsung Tags. Like, it's not like they're charging a premium for it, so it's hard not to recommend it on that basis, assuming you're an iPhone user, right? Obviously, yeah. It doesn't work with Android and stuff. But the precision finding experience, I was a little let down by. Like, it does work, but the angle and the range that you have to be at is quite finicky. Like, if you go to an area where the map will tell you where it is, that's going to be accurate to like 100 meters or 200 meters based on the GPS accuracy of the current location. The precision finding experience will show up when you get closer to the dot on the map, but it'll only activate when you're in like close Bluetooth range. And so you have to kind of get to your location where it says the item's lost, even if it's in your house, right? And then you press find nearby. It opens the precision finding experience. And then you just get grinded with this thing, which basically says, signal weak, walk around a little bit. And so at that point, you then have to walk around basically aimlessly until you hope that you can catch the signal, at which point it will give you the arrow. And that normally only happens when you get within like 10 to 15 feet, in my experience, especially when you're indoors. Like, if you're outdoors and you don't have walls to contend with, it can go to like 20, 30 feet. But if you're trying to find the item in your house, and quite often I lose the keys in my house, you basically have to be in the same room as where the accessory is for the precision finder thing to actually do something useful. And so then you get the arrow and it says, you know, walk this way, and that's fine. But at that point, I could have just made the thing make a sound and probably just found it with my ear, like, immediately, rather than actually needing the arrow guidance. Mm-hmm. And similarly, when you get really close to the accessory, like, say, within 3 feet, the precision finding experience also doesn't really like it at that distance either, because it just says you're so close that it just changes to a circle. Like, you don't get the arrow direction anymore. It's just nearby, and then you kind of have to, again, find it yourself. So when you get within, like, the 1 to 2 feet range, you're basically, like, just looking for it with your eyes. Like, you're not actually using the UWB part
or your ears, yeah.
Yes, but that's what I mean. Like, I could have found all these items easier if I just made it make a noise. Right?
So precision is a little bit of a gimmick for you then?
Yeah. Like, it's fun to do. But just the range limitations make it, like, in every case where I tried it, I was like, I should just made this thing make a sound, like, a minute ago, and I found the item a lot faster. Like, if precision finding worked at wider range, like, not 10 to 15 feet inside, but, like, 30 feet, 40 feet, then it might actually have some use, because you could just be on the same level as it, and it could tell you where to go.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to go on, like, a bit of a goose chase until you get within 10 feet, and then you get close-ish, but then it still doesn't know exactly where you are. So when you get really close, you're then basically looking for it with your eyes again.
Yeah. Have you taken yours apart yet?
No, of course not.
I mean, like, to take out the battery and look inside.
Oh, yeah. I haven't done it. I'm not iFix it. I'm not doing it. I unscrewed it to see where the battery was, yeah.
Yeah. That's a neat and different experience for an Apple product.
Yeah. a rechargeable battery, a replaceable battery, like, that is...
Yeah.
You can tell Johnny Ives left the company. No.
I was thinking
it's
about...
It's kind of impressive, like, when you unscrew it, because there's literally just the battery in the middle, and then all of the electronics and radios sit in that outer ring, right? Like, it's almost like a mini Apple Park in terms of the layout.
True. I was thinking about kind of the Tile complaints about how it's antitrust. It's not competitive. Apple has the advantage of having this built into their phones. And... If I were on Apple's side arguing against that, I would be like, look, our AirTags are so basic, you have to have an accessory to put them in before you can even, you know, attach them to anything. The size doesn't contribute to just like being inside of things like small places or attached to things without another attachment. And one of the common things I think is like put it in a wallet, and I tried that for a few days, but it just makes the wallet. I think even if you have a big wallet, you've got a hard thing in there, like a hard button in your, and if you're sitting on your wallet, you know, it's in your back pocket, you kind of feel it. And so I don't love the wallet use case. And if I'm not mistaken in this, that tile has like a rectangle shaped tile that can go in your wallet.
Yeah, they have literally something that looks like a credit card.
And right. Yeah.
The same thing.
Yeah. That's a good idea for tracking your wallet. Cause I didn't find that the wallet experience was very good. The key situation is interesting too. This is one of the things I'll mention in my story when I write it tonight is that my car is a 10th generation Honda Civic. So they just redesigned it this year, or next year, I've got like the over the last few years design of a Honda Civic. And it's a very common car. Like it's affordable and you see them all over. And, of course the model I have has CarPlay and also has push to start instead of a key ignition. You know, you put the key in and twist it. And so the key fob is very important. And it isn't just the unlock the doors, but it's also start the car. The Apple keychain accessory for AirTags, the key fob doesn't really fit it. Like the keychain's too big. It's too wide. It's narrow, but also wide.
Yeah.
You can't make the key fob fit, flush. It's like, it's going to stick out like straight out, you know, as if you're, I don't know, holding it up, but you're not. So I found that I cannot use my very common key car fob with the AirTag keychain from Apple because the keychain looks nice. I mean, as far as a little metal circle goes, but it literally doesn't function as a keychain for my very common car's key fob. And so what I did was I just used the keychain I already had and I put the Apple keychain on my existing keychain. And then, you know, it's, and it also makes it where the AirTag sits the right way with all your other keys. Because mm-hmm. Apple has it where it's wide as it hangs down versus being, I guess the idea is like they don't want it to be, front and back with the keys. They want it to be side to side with the keys around it and to display it, I suppose. But, I find that to be even more awkward. And so
it adds to the bulk. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. To your overall keychain, you know, bulkiness. And so the fact that it wouldn't fit on my very common car's key fob, made me use a different key, an extra keychain in that way. And then because it's hanging on the keychain, it does make the AirTag sit the right way where it's flush with all the other keys and key fobs. So that's my keychain review.
No, and you're not the only one to mention like the fob doesn't fit on the keychain that Apple gives you, and I've seen plenty of people on Twitter say that, oh, we just had to use the same keychain that I have and just fit the tag onto that. So
yeah, I was kind of excited because the keychain does look neat. I mean, it's if Apple designed a keychain, well, they did, and here it is. And it just it's a very subtle thing. Who cares what the keychain looks like? But it's nice if you get to use that one, but it, you know, the key fob wouldn't fit on it. So it's like really impractical in that way. But of course it's an easy fix. Just use another keychain either with the AirTag or put that keychain on your keychain, which is what I did. And so that's cool. I've also tried the loops both in leather and the non-named material. because it isn't like leather and silicone, you know, what they do with the cases. It's leather and then it's no descriptor. But I got the white version of the not leather material and then the saddle brown version of the leather material in the loop. And I was kind of thinking like maybe that's more practical for a keychain than even the keychain accessory. Like it adds about the same amount of bulk to it. And the loop accessory, the way it works is pretty clever. Anyone could steal it, you know, undo the loop situation because it's like it loops around itself, you know, and it's got this big cutout to like put the whole AirTag through. You know, you could just take it off and then there goes your AirTag. You know, of course, not a lot of value in whoever took those. Unless they just wanted to like separate it from your keys. But again, if they stole your keys, they could just ditch the AirTag too. You know, it's not high security. But the loop, I was thinking, like, I might have to try this on the, as a keychain, and then put the actual keychain one on my backpack on like the zipper. And then that's the best way to put it on the backpack. So, I've got to play around with things, but I might go that way. And then I think between those two accessories, a keychain and a loop, you're bound to want many, many more ways of attaching this to something. Mm-hmm. And Apple and their partner Belkin, they haven't begun to cover the gamut of what's possible with attaching an AirTag to something. And so in that regard, it's like, it'll be good to see when there's not just other things announced and coming in July, but actually shipping, and not just this is the X company's version of what Apple does for cheaper, but like here is another way of attaching to something, you know, whether it's, I don't know, a magnet or Velcro or just something adhesive, you know. I think there's a lot of ways you could do that. But so far so good. And I am glad I got them. You know, they're only $25 to $29 each. And just in the exercise of, I wouldn't have had this conversation with you if I didn't get them. It's made it worth it.
Yeah. And hopefully if you do lose any of those things in the next year or so, you'll be able to find them again. I mean, that's the thing, is like, if you lose something with an AirTag attached to it and you find it because of the tag, you're going to be so happy. If you lose something with an AirTag attached to it and you still can't find the item, you're just going to be even more incensed about it.
Like, yeah.
It's going to be like a double whammy.
My Space Explored colleague, Derek Wise, is out in Boca Chica, Texas, where SpaceX tests their Starship rocket. And today, he said, I left my backpack at the rocket ranch, which is like a place you go and stay. And I found it with the AirTag. And I think it's a situation where he left it, and of course that's where it was, but he could see that it was there because of the AirTag. And we kind of talked about it as a group, like, is this news, the first item to be found because of an AirTag, you know? Like, are we going to have those, you know, Apple Watch saves lives stories, but for AirTags, you know? I found this thing that I couldn't live without.
You know. I was locked out of my house, but AirTag saved me.
Right, yeah, yeah. So that's a thing, but again, in this situation, I'm pretty sure it's like, well, it's the last place you left it, and you know where that was, and it's still there. But even that was, I think, a good feeling for Derek. And the keys thing is, you know, where are the keys in the house? I have definitely had my keys misplaced, not because I don't know where I put them, because I put them in the key spot where I always put them, but because someone else in the house moved them. Especially, this is a thing with toddlers, where on multiple occasions I can remember being ready to go somewhere and my keys not being there and having no idea where they are. And that's where I think the speaker comes into play, you know, the precision finding and everything, like, take it or leave it. But the speaker is pretty good to not be an actual, like, you know, audio speaker, but to be a vibrating, I mean, that's what all sound is, but, the way that they've achieved that is clever. It sounds good. It isn't just like a piece of plastic vibrating. It's like tones.
I was apprehensive that it was going to sound like the Apple Watch's sound when you eject the water, you know, like very very monotone. But no, it sounds like a decent speaker, even though it's just like vibrating the plastic on the outside.
Yeah, and that makes for a pretty cool setup experience too, because you might never need to play a sound through your AirTag, but when you pull the little tab on it to pair it with your phone, you get the sound, and that's pretty. Beep, beep. Yeah, that's a pretty pleasant, you know, onboarding experience. So AirTags, I can't imagine we discussed these again or as much as we discussed them over the last 2.5 years. But
when one of us loses something and finds it, that'll be a moment. But otherwise, it's like there are a couple of other little things, like really quickly.
Yes.
Precision finding was slightly disappointing, but the Bluetooth system works great. There is the issue that at the moment, the items only show up for you. So over family sharing, you can't let the rest of your family actually see the same items, even though you can see their devices. You can't share items. So if you do have like a partner or something, you want to share keys with them, you can't do it. Only one the AirTags only assigned to one person's account. Similarly, the AirTags don't appear if you log into iCloud.com. They're just not there. The items tab isn't there. So if you were out and about and you lost your phone and the tags, like, even if you borrowed someone's computer, you could only find their, you could only find your phone. You couldn't find the tag, which is a bit of a omission. So hopefully they can fill that out. And we've seen code references to being able to share AirTags with family members and stuff and friends, similar to the to what you can do with the car key, right? If you happen to have the car key car, where you can share a tag permanently, or you can share it for a few hours, right? Like, so you have those options, but right now that's just not implemented. And then the other thing is some kind of like tether mode would be nice. So say if you're at the airport and you put like the AirTag on your luggage, I'd like it to like buzz me if my luggage goes out of range of my phone.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
right now, AirTag is like a passive experience where you have to notice that you've actually lost your item before, and then you have to look it up on the map, right? Some of these other Bluetooth trackers have this option where you can like put it in a quote tethering mode, where if as soon as the tag goes out of range of the phone, it your phone will vibrate and alert you to it, so you can more immediately see that, oh, you've actually dropped this thing and you've misplaced it.
Yeah, I mean,
that'd be something where like you wouldn't have it on 24/7 all days of the week, but maybe in certain circumstances you could like turn on the alarm option for like the duration of your travel, for instance. Then you could turn it off when you get home.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely more they can and hopefully do with their tags. I mean, even something as simple as you mentioned no iCloud support. There's no Apple Watch support. Like you can't say these things from your Apple Watch. You can from your Mac and your iPad, as well as the phone, of course. But the Find My app on Apple Watch is Find People, and it's not even devices, which is a miss, and it's certainly not items, which feels like a pretty reasonable thing to have on the watch in terms of wanting to see where your items are, because you could go out on a phoneless experience with a cellular watch and then be in a scenario where you're trying to find your Find My or your AirTag, and you gotta have your phone with you. See, so that's a miss. Maybe watch OS 8 and next month and then actually coming out in the fall. But yeah, AirTag.
Yeah. And how you were saying at the start of this conversation about like how they don't really fit in your wallet, and Tal has different sizes and configurations.
Yeah.
Like having the credit card version, because precision finding isn't as big a deal as, I was kind of hoping it would be. I'd have no qualms with buying like a third party Find My accessory say if Chipolo came out with, because they're coming out with like the One Spot tracker, which is basically just like an AirTag, but square. But imagine a Chipolo came out with a credit card version. You could happily buy that and slip that in your wallet, and it would give you the best parts of the AirTag experience in a different shape. And like Apple can offer their circular one, and then the Find My network supports all these third-party accessories as well. That if they come online and then a company actually bothers to make them, they'll get the core benefit, like a billion iPhones telling you where their locations are, and it will be integrated into the Find My app directly. Like that is the main advantage of the AirTag, and that will be available to the third-party ecosystem. So there's a chance for other companies to fill in the gaps, because I don't expect Apple to make a whole different range of AirTag sizes. Like,
no.
That's what a company like Tile does, because that's their whole business. But Apple's not going to bother with that. But with a Find My network program available, that's a possibility.
Yeah, they're probably exhausted from making all the accessories, that there's just no time for different shapes of AirTags. The Chipolo, the tracker, that is a really good point, that suddenly there's value there. We don't know the price yet of that thing, but I don't think it's going to be very competitive with an AirTag price, because AirTag is $29.
Yeah, the other Chipolo ones, like the non-Find My one, but just like the standard Bluetooth, it's like around like $40.
So. Yeah. So that part is tough. But certainly if something like that takes on the different sizes and shapes, that would be compelling. As long as they have a speaker, because the emitting sound part,
you kind of need that.
Yeah, it's pretty important. Do you think that we'd see AirTag exists because of the U1 chip? It's like, we can do this thing with precision finding that's different than what the market has already. We have to Find My network. This is a thing. Do you think that AirTag would have the same design, or that the accessories would exist like they are, if not for the Apple Watch? Because I can't help but think about their comfort in making these leather straps for the, not even just the Hermes ones, but just the Apple leather versions.
Yeah.
But in that, like, they're, you know, a phone case is one thing, but like there's no utility. There's even less utility in like a leather strap than there is in like a fluoroelastomer band for an Apple Watch because of like, you know, waterproofing. So it just makes me think that we wouldn't see either AirTag with the same design it has now. Like maybe they would then have integrated a little slot for a string or something.
Yeah, like they literally could have made it like a teardrop shape and just made that little cut out bit be the circle of the hole that you can fling it on anything.
Yeah. But it's not for the Apple Watch bands that it's got them, because there is a big part of it that is you may never lose this thing, but people are getting value out of it. They're enjoying it and having the emotional reaction to it because they've got their initials on it or you know, a special emoji on it, or especially because of the accessories that is on display. And there's no more utility in having a leather case than there is having something like the Belkin string attached, you know, accessory. But it's, you know, I think the answer is yes, that it's this Apple Watch like influenced this sure. style. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then last thing, I hadn't thought about it, but I wonder if you could rig up on the end, take out the battery, you know, pull the back cover, put a piece of string in there, secure it, you know, the glue or something, put it back on, even tape, put it back on. And if that would be secure enough for that string to like exist and hang via loop without having another accessory, without having to spend money on accessory.
Well, have you seen the people that have drilled a hole in it?
I have seen those people. Yeah.
Yeah. There's I think he did a tear down and there's like three or four spots around the outside edge where nothing's there, but just some plastic and a bit of glue for the logic board that's inside. So iFixit showed that you can drill a hole, like with a little Dremel, straight through the AirTag, enough to fit a piece of string through, and the function of the AirTag is unimpaired. So it's a really small hole. Like, it's small, but you can do it. You can just drill a hole straight through it.
Yeah, I don't want to do that, but putting a string inside of the enclosure part of it, I'm inclined to try that just for science.
Yeah. I mean, do you have one of the Belkin secure holder thingies?
No, I don't. No.
Like, if you just want something that's small, like for your keys, I would. I know it doesn't look as pretty as the leather stuff, but in terms of just slimness and size, it's way superior. Like, it's tiny. Like,
yeah.
So if you're just looking for something to sling on your keys and you don't want it to get in the way of all your stuff on there, the Belkin secure holder is definitely like the best Apple option. And if you want a Belkin secure holder, but for a third of the price, you can buy one on Amazon.
Yeah. And because we just finished the Apple event, we're talking about what we ordered. Let's see what else I've got before we go on to court drama. Let's see. I recovered my Apple TV. So I hadn't moved with it and it wasn't being used where it was. And so I recovered that. And, because of that, I'm now only in search of the new Siri remote and not the Apple TV 4K Gen 2, because there's just not any changes that affect me in the second version. You know, even the AirPlay high frame rate HDR content is like, I didn't do that before. And, I don't see that being a thing I, you know, want. If I were to buy like a second TV, because right now I only use one TV. If I were to buy a second TV, then that's the Apple TV I would buy, not the HD, of course. And then if you find the 4K Apple TV Gen 1, it's going to come with the old remote and not be cheaper anyway. So, but I'm just looking for the remote. Apple has shipments in June. So I'm not going to order one from Apple.com. I'm going to wait until they're actually shipping and then hope that, like with AirTags, that Best Buy and Walmart and Target carry those things. So, and Amazon sells them too. They sell the remote. So I was thinking earlier, you know, the HomePod Amazon Music thing, I wonder if the holdup is like some kind of an arrangement where a HomePod Mini is sold on Amazon.com and it's all part of a big deal, like the Prime Video app was on the Apple TV and Amazon selling Apple TV again.
Because the HomePod, like the Apple TV sold on Amazon, but the HomePod still isn't. Yeah.
Everything from Apple sold. I don't know about Macs. Everything from Apple sold. I think Macs are too.
Most Macs are sold through Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah. Except for the HomePod, because it's like the Echo competitor somewhat, you know. And then lastly, as we wrap up the what did we buy from last week's event thing.
What did you buy?
Yeah.
Tell us about.
Yeah. No, I'm as much as I want the iMac, I'm not in a rush to discuss this last week, you know, have my same computer in a desktop version. And so I'm not going to order one, and I probably won't buy one when they're out, because I'm confident that this calendar year we'll see what else is coming in terms of the bigger iMac and maybe even an Apple monitor. So that's something to easily be patient about. But I did pre-order an iPad Pro 12.9 inch. So it was just part of my whole thing. Like, it's money. I'm gonna spend it, but I'm also going to be able to do it's less about for me specifically. If I were recommending the iPad Pro to people, it's like, for me, it can't replace my Mac yet. And we have no idea what's coming at WWDC for iPadOS 15. So don't buy it on that either. You know, wait and see. And I can't nail down the thing that the iPad Pro is for me, except that I get to test and write about the screen change and like, compare it to an OLED TV, and compare it to an LCD TV, you know, and compare it to the OLED iPhones for that matter. Like, those are stories I want to do. And then also, if iPadOS 15 is anything impressive, even if there's like, you know, a thing or two to write about, you know, that's interesting. Even in like beta features, you know, beta updates year or week over week, then that gives the iPad purpose for me. But it's because of this unique position of career that it's not how does the iPad help me in my career for doing my day job, but it's that part of my day job is benefited by evaluating the current iPad. And then lastly,
part of your day job is writing about how the iPad Pro isn't good enough at being.
That is true. That is true. And then lastly, I was thinking about this, and I was like, you know, they're probably not going to redesign the iPad next year. I think we're on this iPad, for a while. And the best time to buy something new, if you care about not being outdated or having a better version that's way better come up soon, is when it first comes out. And so, I think the last time that was a good time to buy an iPad was 2018 when we got the current design. 2020, no.
Skip.
No. Yeah, skip. But 2021, it's like the first time in 3 years that it's a good time to buy an iPad Pro. Not the 11 inch, just the 12.9 inch because of the screen type. And that, you know, likely what we'll see in the next big update to the iPad is that now the 11 inch gets the new screen type. And if you've got the 12.9 inch, that there's less to do there except for maybe an even better chip. So that all helped me settle into just embrace it and don't look at it as like, what do I get out of the iPad, but let me have the iPad to evaluate and not just at launch, but over time. So it's a cellular version because 5G, why not?
Yeah. And even if iPadOS, what is it, 15?
Doesn't
actually solve the core issues or what we want it to, they're obviously going to have, you know, decent new features for iPadOS this year in some capacity. So you can at least try them out and tell me what you think about them, you know?
And the experience really will be that my MacBook Air and my iPad Pro have the same specs in terms of M1, 8 gigabytes of RAM. The iPad has 5G, but, you know, I'd love it on the Mac if I could have it. But it's the first time that there actually is an apples-to-apples comparison of the performance is the same, but the capabilities are different. You know, there's some things you can do on an iPad that you can't do on a Mac. There's a lot of things you can do on a Mac that you can't do on an iPad. So I think it's going to, you know, it's going to be fun to evaluate it from that point of view. And I don't think I bought anything else. I'll let you know if I did. All right, let's go to court.
Yeah, I don't want to spend like age in this because it's probably going to be a recurring topic for a few weeks because the Apple Epic trial commenced this week, but it's scheduled to go for like the entire month of May. And even when the like testimonies are finished, the judge will have to go off and think about the decision. So there's a chance that the ruling comes out like the middle of WWDC week, which would be a bit awkward. But obviously, it's going to come up and happen again. The actual trial is kind of boring, like a lot of trials are. Like, you know, Apple's lawyers say some stuff, Epic lawyers say some stuff. We haven't yet had the interesting testimonies from, like, Apple execs we actually recognize, like Phil Schiller or Craig Federighi, and I think even Scott Forstall's going to turn up for a little bit. They haven't, you know, took to the stand yet to say their cases over the audio network, which, by the way, the court audio system is terrible. Like, even if you actually want to hear it, you have to phone in to this number, and then the quality of the microphone is absolutely terrible. Like, it's these two tech giants having a court case and you can't actually hear what's going on. It's kind of ridiculous, but that's beside the point. Today we did see some testimony from the Apple vice president of the App Store, Matt Fisher, which is sort of interesting because he normally keeps like a low profile. Like, you probably haven't heard the name Matt Fisher before this trial happened, if you see what I mean. But most of the stuff that's been like interesting about the court case is what's come out in the court documents and the supporting evidence for the testimonies. And that basically comes down to a load of emails that, you know, Apple employees write that they never think are ever going to see the light of day externally. But then a trial like this comes along and it actually goes to court rather than having a settlement. And so we get to see some funny stuff. Some of the little highlights, there was the Epic's witnesses computed using Apple's numbers that the App Store had about a 78% profit margin, and that's a number that Apple's tried to keep quiet for a long time. Like, they don't break out profit margins for individual business segments, and this is Epic's witness, so, you know, they're incentivized to say a higher number. Apple will dispute the number, I'm sure, as the trial goes on, but it's an open secret. Everyone knows the App Store makes loads of money, but now we actually have like an attached number to it, 78%. There was also a thing where before relations between Apple and Epic broke down, they were actually planning a subscription bundle. So you could get the Fortnite Club subscription, which is like a monthly pass where you get, you know, cosmetics from Fortnite, combined with Apple Music and Apple TV Plus. This was around early 2019, so before Apple One was like a thing. There was planning. It's not clear how far along it got, like whether it was firmly agreed, but it was at least discussed that there would have been a $20 bundle of Fortnite, Apple Music, and Apple TV Plus, which is quite funny. There was also a lot of emails going back and forth about the situation when Netflix was threatening to leave the in-app purchase system, which is around 2018. And Netflix was clearly like Apple's biggest customer of in-app purchase. They were the biggest user, bringing the most commissions. And they had like dedicated people whose like sole job it was just to try and keep the Netflix business alive and not have them quit out in IAP, which is ultimately what happened. They had like special tests being run about, like, Netflix had complained that churn, so the amount of people cancelling a subscription, was higher through in-app purchase than it was through the Netflix website. So they had like Apple had like dedicated teams trying to work out why the numbers were against them. They had teams that were evaluating the impact of Netflix testing removal of IAP from certain regions. They had a million different ways that they were trying to convince Netflix that they should carry on with IAP. They were offering to train Apple Store employees to promote Netflix in Apple stores. They were going to maybe table a bundle of Netflix and Apple TV Plus. That seems to be a common thread here, is that whenever you're a big company, they start talking about doing a bundle. It doesn't matter whether you're Fortnite or Netflix. There's a bundle. There's a bundle in the, at least in, under discussion. They were talking about giving Netflix like even more featuring on the App Store, like special editorial marketing collaborations, like all of this stuff they were trying to do to win Netflix over. But even so, obviously we know that Netflix didn't continue and they quit the IAP program. And then on the like the negative side of this, there's like an email thread where they were saying that Netflix was the number one app featured by Apple in App Store editorial, like on the Today tab, you know, on the in the App Store, that Today thing where they do these little stories. Mm-hmm. Netflix was their like number one partner featured there. They had more stories than any other application. And then when Netflix decided that they were done with IAP, Apple had, quote, punitive measures, and that meant that they never featured them ever again. So if you want to look at Apple as a bad guy, that's that's one of the consequences of dropping out of IAP, is that your nice friendly relationship with App Store Editorial also completely goes away. There was also a funny thing where Steve Jobs was talking about
these aren't back emails.
This is back in like 2010, obviously. Facebook was starting to get into games, so they wanted to run like a mini app store inside the Facebook app with like Farmville and all these other games inside there, and obviously Apple was pushing back against it. And Jobs, in an email to Schiller, wrote Facebook as FECEBOOK. So he was like, we'd have to worry about feces book, which is quite hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, Jobs might not have Twitter, you know, when he was around, but he did have email. And every time there's a discovery process for something legal, it never fails that there's just more Jobs communication that is entertaining.
So. Yeah, we saw snippets of Jobs' emailing style in those, you know, few things where customers would email him and he'd send replies out. But yeah, he certainly was persistent. He was certainly consistent with that in his internal communications as well. Like, there's Phil Schiller will write like four paragraphs of discussion about some App Store problem, and then the Jobs reply will be like one sentence. We don't need to worry about that. Full stop. It was just how he was wired. It's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Efficient.
I personally don't think Epic's going to win this case. Like, it's just two big companies fighting over how much money they need to pay each other, and the court has very little interest, I think, in actually helping one company commercialize slightly better. Like, the chance of Epic getting a big victory here is probably quite slim. Like, I think the App Store should have some reform. At the very least, apps should probably be allowed to tell their customers that they can subscribe elsewhere. Like, the situation where Netflix can't even say that you can subscribe on the website is pretty ridiculous.
Yes.
But whether that actually gets resolved as a result of this case is highly in doubt. Like, even in one of Tim Sweeney's testimony, like, Sweeney was getting questioned this week, and Apple asked him, if Apple had offered you Epic a special deal, would you have taken it? Sweeney literally says yes. Like, they only care about their own interests. Like, the court system doesn't have much care about what one commercial business thinks about another one. Like, they're not going to care. I think this case is not going to go well for Epic. Like, the court's just going to say, look, you agree to these rules. These are the rules. There you go. Other ongoing investigations might have more fruit in actually making change happen, but I don't think the Epic trial is going to have much impact.
Yeah, it's when regulatory bodies look at practices and they can affect the change themselves versus Epic with their own interest. and it's so open about how it was marketing and how it was planned and everything. So yeah, in the meantime,
there's emails where Epic's like, we need to work out a marketing campaign so we aren't the bad guys. Like, Apple's not a saint. Don't get me wrong. They're all, you know, trying to make as much money as possible, but that's not really a something that the court is going to preside over. You know, like,
yeah,
they're not going to tell Apple that you can't, you know, you've got to give Epic like 10% commission. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just not going to happen that way.
Yeah.
This court trial isn't talking about any competitiveness. It's just talking about Apple and Epic's relationship, essentially.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
We did see some progress from regulatory side of the fence, because the EU Commission released a preliminary conclusion this week that said that Apple had unfairly favored Apple Music over rivals. This is because of the enforced high commission fees that Apple imposes on third-party apps in the App Store, and that these apps are not allowed to tell their users that other purchase methods are available. This is a preliminary judgment, so that doesn't mean any like fines or corrective action has been announced yet. What happens now is that basically the list of complaints that the EU has come up with get sent to Apple. They get to talk about it for 12 weeks and go back and forth. And then at the end of the 12 weeks, the EU will release their final ruling on whether Apple did infringe or not. And the potential restitution can include up to 10% of annual revenue, but it's not going to be 10% of annual revenue, right? Like, it'll be a couple of billion, but, you know, Apple can brush that off. The thing they're more worried about is whether they have to force to change the laws of the App Store, at least in the EU, where the European Commission obviously has remit. Like, this particular case is only about music streaming, so it might be that the result is like Apple is not allowed to charge commission for streaming services where they also offer their own streaming service, for instance, right? Because that's really what this particular case is about. But the EU also have other ongoing investigations into games and books and other categories too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does the EU decision affect you in the UK?
That is a good question, actually. I don't know. I mean, it would be very weird if, like, Apple was forced to do something only in the... Like, I guess it's possible, but, like, if the EU said that Spotify must be allowed to tell its customers that they can go and sign up online, I guess Apple could say that, fine, we'll let it happen only in European countries. Mm-hmm. And then in the US, it still just has the login field and nothing else.
Yeah, but, and then maybe
that'd be a weird splintering.
Maybe Brexit would mean that, you know, Apple's based in what is it, Cork Island? Mm-hmm. so that they wouldn't have to make the change in the UK because of Brexit.
That is true, actually. I actually know how that works. Like, I know we kind of, like, adopted all the EU policy when Brexit happened, but I don't know how far along we are in, like, actually distancing ourselves from what they do, if you see what I mean. So I don't actually know where that lands, but...
Fun.
The UK's got their own investigations, I'm sure, so it'll come round. It'll be their turn soon enough.
True. All right. That is the Half Hour Podcast for this week. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at ApolloZach, and you can find all my work at ApolloZach.com. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at?
BZAMayo.
And you can email us both together at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And special thanks to Seth Kirkowski for editing our show every week. He's on Twitter at Seth Kirk, KURK. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.